This is the beginning of Channel 2 Right. The beginning of Channel 2 Right. This is the beginning of Channel 2 Right. This is the beginning of Channel 2 Right. This is Thursday morning, the 21, 2, 3, 4th, I guess, of April 1970. I'm going over and see the Pattersons, and maybe Phil come back and advise me on something and come in and talk a little bit. I don't know. This is the beginning of Channel 2 Right.
Right here.
They'll be up in a minute, Phil. We'll go out there and inspect them.
They've come up.
Yeah, they've come up.
Could I give you a little glass of Gatorade?
No.
Give them a little something, Phil. Just
no, I don't need anything, honey. I just had some water just before he come, and that's...
Phil, that front pasture there where that oats is. Now, them oats and rye stools, they won't cause me any trouble, will they?
No.
Just hair them once or twice and...
Yeah. And when you break it good, and then sow your seed and drag them in or cut them in or whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But break it good. You know, I found, I don't know anything about farming, but I found out what little that I did learn about it from Mabel, her farming, that is one big thing, to break your land good.
Yeah.
And then plant your stuff. And planting that bahia grass, just like I tell you, you'll sweat it. It ain't no good, and what you done wasn't no good, but just forget it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll come.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could have got somebody, I'd have planted that little 4-acre patch down there the third time, and I did plant it the second time, and they told me to put 10 pounds to the acre. I bought 100 pounds of seed and put on 4 acres. And but you know, in about a year's time, that was the darnest stand of grass you ever seen.
Yeah.
But I planted it twice, and the last time I put 100 pounds of seed down there.
Oh.
And
I kept wishing for you when I was putting out that millet seed, because I had all them 50-pound bags of millet, and they wasn't going fast enough. And I tell you what I think I did. You see, I have put out indigo, just indigo, indigo, indigo. I'm sort of geared to indigo. And indigo seed's a whole lot smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need as much of an opening. And I could see those millet seeds going out, but there was about half enough. Now they'll come up and they'll do all right, but they won't be sick enough.
Mm-hmm. I kind of believe in putting enough seed down there to get a stand.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had enough. I never have had enough seed to plant a place, and I never have had enough fertilizer. When I went out to put out fertilizer. Now, that there little old patch there by the barn, you know.
What's that, a good acre?
Just about an acre. And I put 4 sacks of 10 fertilizer out there to put over that. Man, I went out there to put it out. And I had to go down there and get another sack to finish it out, and like to not have enough then. And So I started putting out the oats. There's 3 bushels come in a sack, I think it is. And they claim a bushel oats to the acre is pretty heavy sowing. And so I went and got Uncle Gil to come up there and plant them oats for me, because I know I wouldn't have enough with 3 bushels to plant it. And he come up there and planted it, and he had about a bushel left, which I got out there and put them on there too. But I did have some oats when they come up.
Well, what do you think about mixing oats and rye?
No, son. No, sir, it won't do. What they do, they'll walk on and chomp down the oats.
You're right.
The rye and eat the oats.
Well, now that's what you see out there, I guess. All that's rye hit it out.
Mm-hmm. And you had some oats in there?
Yeah. I put my oats in rye.
Well, I never would do that. They'll tromp down their rye and let it go to seed anything else and eat oats. And they'll eat them down so close till they won't come back. And you know, the best oats, you let them graze so long on it.
Take them off.
And then take them off, you know, and then where they bite it, there's 4 or 5 sprouts will come up and you have a much better stand of oats than you did to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now that's my experience with it.
Yeah.
And you know, up in Georgia, those farmers
now that's grown cows.
Mr. Rutland, the fellow that practically raised me, I stayed on a farm part of 2 years up there, but I didn't do nothing, not as far as farming was concerned. I got drunk one night, and boy, I pitched a drunk. And he was mad with me next morning. He had old niggas looked after the barn. Hitch up 2 of the biggest mules there was there to a Lynchburg 27 turning plow. And now he was going to send me over in a new ground to start plying over there in new ground. When he got it fixed up, told me what he wanted me to do, take them mules over there and start applying in that new ground over there. I looked at it and I told him, I said, now you know me better than that. I said, I ain't gonna plow them or no other damn place, for as that's concerned. And I says, of course, I guess that means to get my horse and my other pair of breeches and leave. And I says, that's what I'll do, but I says, I ain't gonna, not today, tomorrow, nor no other time, ever put my hand on a damn plow. And I didn't until we moved over there, and I plowed a little for a nigger over there, and that's the only time I ever plowed in my life.
Well, how'd you get to be so hard-headed? You just a boy.
I don't know. You know, my daddy put me to putting some stables in a boiler. One of these old locomotive-type boilers. Crown sheet was down. And I taken a jack and jacked the crown sheet up and took the old stay bolts out. And Daddy went to
ahead. I'll be right back.
Went to Auburn and got some stables. And he brought them back. He brought them the same size that the ones was in there.
Yeah.
Well, you see, they had been in there. The threads was gone. They're pieces of iron about that long, and you have to screw them in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to bread each end of them and cork them to stop the leak. And they got to go in that tight, you know, and when you get them, well, then you saw what you don't need, and all. And I had worked in the boiler shop, and I knew what I was doing, and I went in there, and my dad and two, three other men, they had a fifth of liquor middle of the poker table there playing poker. And for pretty high stakes, you didn't ever know who in the devil you'd waking for. You might be waking my daddy one day and some other guy the next day. But I went up and told my daddy that them bowls were too small. Now, this was in August, and I wouldn't have been 13 years old until October. And I went up and I told him that those things were too small, that there was no threads left in it. They had to be an oversized bolt and new threads cut in there and put in there before it would be all right. He told me to go back and put those things in. He says, you cork them.
Go ahead and finish the story, Mr. Clarence. Sit down here just a minute, and I'll give you a drink of water.
Go right ahead.
And cork them good, and says, then they'll get a package of rice and put in there, and says it'll stop the leak. I did what he said do, and that thing blowed out, and he just scalded a nigga terrible. It just scalded him terrible.
Now, what y'all talking about?
That boiler.
He
had me working on a boiler.
Oh, you wasn't going to plow. What was it?
He was being hard-headed.
No, she asked me about that, and I told her that that went a long way back, so... the old man got after me, and the old boy, he's talking mighty bad to me about it, you know. And just a few months being 13 years old.
And being so hard-headed?
And, hard-headed. I done just exactly what he said to.
Yeah.
But I knowed, more than I knowed, it wouldn't hold. Well, when it blew it out, it scalded this nigga whole body bad and all like that. And so he started cussing me about it.
Yeah. And Mr. Rutland?
No, and my daddy.
Your daddy?
And I walked straight on up the hill. Not a thing in the world. I didn't have a penny. I didn't have no more clothes. It was worth going by the house and getting them.
And you weren't 13 yet.
No. And I went on over there to an old church, old country church, and there's a great big old limb that had fell down. There, the wind blowed it out of one of them old trees around the churchyard. And there was a pump there, one of these old hand pumps. And I got me some water and sat down on one of that old limb there. And I asked myself out loud, well, where in the hell are you going? And I was 10 miles from home, from town then. And a fella hauled and carried the mail there for years and carried it long as he lived, I reckon, when. He come along there, and I reckon at the crossroad there that they must have been 15, 20 mailboxes. And he was putting out his mail. I got out, I went out there, and I asked him, I says, Maren, I said, can I go to town with you? He said, Pat says, you know that it's against the rules for you to meet or let anybody ride, but said, I can't leave you out here and hit it hot like this. Said, all right. I got in there and we went on. And up the end of Isabella Street, I reckon it were 18, 20 blocks from town. I told him, I said, I'd get out here. I didn't want to get him in no trouble. And I got out, and I walked on down this fellow Rutland's place. He run a store there, and a hardware store, and a grocery store, and it was known as a farmer supply place. He had anything you needed. And then he had a warehouse back of it that he put up all these harrows and binders and mowers and all that stuff, you know, and sold them. And I worked in the grocery store a while, and that's the hardest work I have done in my life.
But you still didn't want to plow.
And no, I wasn't going to do it either.
This Mr. Patterson, you know him?
I've seen him around.
Now, he's from Williston. He has a gas from Williston. You don't. Who do you buy from?
Gas?
Uh-huh.
We buy from this little man up there. Do it, filling station up there.
You don't have gas?
Oh, no.
You don't have gas?
No, we don't use gas.
Let me tell you. You know, I've thought about that no telling how many times. Back, I don't know, last time or two you were here, we got talking out there. And I was thinking about that list of customers you have. And you got so many calls to make. And I'd been out there for a week or two and getting a little bit in that in them little 25-pound bottles. And I remember you got talking, and you said it wasn't the calls you made, wasn't that you had so many of them, but it was collecting. That and one call wouldn't do it.
Takes time. See, I got a lot of color. If you don't see them every week and get that dollar and a half, $2, you don't get it.
Oh, they don't pay for the whole thing.
If he's got a dollar, you better write him a receipt for it.
Yeah.
So if you tell him to wait till next week, give me $2, you won't get the dollar then.
Is that right?
Yeah, we got between 700 and 800 customers.
Yeah.
And I work 2/3 of those.
Yeah.
A dollar a week.
Some of them will pay you a dollar a week.
Yeah.
They burn a tank of gas, say, every 2 months. By the time he pays you that dollar a week, he gets it paid out. He needs another tank.
And you having to go collect that is worth just about as much now in time and expense as the dollar.
That's right.
Well, I don't know. That's more complicated than I never would have thought that, you know.
So there's lots to it. I've been doing this between 7 and 8 years now.
Oh.
And you got to know just how to work each one of them. Now, some of them, I don't have to go buy.
Yeah.
If I leave my tank of gas, I know they won't need one, say, for 2 months.
Yeah.
But if I leave it, I can just forget it. But they'll send the money I need to come buy.
Yeah.
But we've lost a lot of money, too.
Yes.
Trying to find out who will do what.
Yeah.
I had one move from Micanopy. I was by there Monday. Three times.
Yeah.
Don't know where they go.
Yeah.
Try to help them out.
That didn't pay. And then you try to deliver this stuff when they're there.
I double back. You'd be surprised at the time I'll double back 8 miles or 10 miles.
Mm-hmm.
I go by this house and I know it's a bad risk, but they're about out of gas. I don't want to go ahead and leave it. So I go ahead and work Micanopy. Now I'll turn around and go back to Reddick.
Good Lord.
It's easier for me to go from Micanopy to Reddick. It is for me to work all day and go home. And they call me back out.
Yeah. Or if they run out.
If they run out.
Well, now you see, I never would think about asking anybody to do that. Just make a special trip.
That's right.
I keep these little old bottles around.
You'd be surprised at the people that will. Don't mind it a bit.
They just think you are made out of money.
Guy in my business, in the lumber business, churches was the worst accounts I had.
Right.
Now that ain't no joke. They'd come to you and they'd have a bill somebody had made out there for the material. And all to build a church. They were going to build a church. Probably they didn't have $200 in the trade to start with. And they want you to make them the very lowest price that you could. Then after you do that, they want you to donate half of that to them for it. Well, you go ahead and do all that, and you sell them the stuff, and you will get so aggravated with it till finally you tell them to take it that they need to pay it. And you know that has been their biggest of my business with churches.
Well, now,
and you know I have got 4 churches in Georgia that is my material today. That's every bit of it, and they have never paid me a dime. And I got 4 churches up there.
Well, now, and that was people you know.
Oh, yeah, they're all good people, but finally they got you so disgusted telling you that the board was going to meet the, what do you call these things, like Paul Stanley?
The deacons.
Deacons. That the deacons had to meet and they was going to do something about it. Well, you never heard nothing about it. And finally, you just got so disgusted with it till you figure, oh, hell, life isn't worth this, you know, and give it to them.
Now, you run into a whole lot of your business is the same sort.
Right. I'll guarantee you, I know all kinds.
Or don't you find them churches hard?
Right. Well, slower than anybody else.
Oh, you have the churches too.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir.
Well, that's the worst customers I had. And lawyers is not much better.
The man that's got
and
the money.
And doctors is just a little bit better, but not a whole lot. And the best people that I dealt with were just common old people that worked. And if they bought anything, they figured how they could pay for it.
Like old man Collins that used to work over there. He'd pay what he got, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what I started saying. Your common people will pay better than these people that's got money.
What is that bird eating out there?
He is eating suet, and he'd rather have suet than feed or grain. Now, that's what you ought to have right there where you sit. We can put one up over there. And you see, they'll come up there and just entertain you.
He's a pretty one.
Yeah. And that big old...
I've got a bird feeder out there in the yard, a little box that's got glass on it, so
yeah.
Put the feed between those glasses and it goes down and get it. And,
Well, I know a fellow that'll put you up a system like that for about $150. Miss Patterson shouldn't object, the way she underwrites the Chrysler garage.
Ain't it the God's truth?
Thanks for the water.
Give it. Tell me. Some more before you go. I don't call the names because I don't know them.
You want to get into the gas business?
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
Mabel gave somebody a check not long ago. And
don't let me hold you up.
So I told him, I said, you know that check ain't no good, don't you? And you know the man offered it back to her, told her if she didn't have the money, she could just wait.
She got you for that.
Yeah.
He looked at me, she said, you need to believe what he says, that I would give you a check if it wasn't no good.
You know, that's one thing a lot of people will do. They'll buy and hand you a check. Now hold this to the first of the month, last the next month.
Oh.
I don't have any money in the bank. Hold this check. It'll be good then. No interest or anything on it.
Yeah.
And 4 times out of 5, when you do send it in, you're just a little bit too late.
Oh,
comes down right back.
Well, I
then you got to go and hunt them up and try to get your money out of it.
You know the experience I have up here at the bank. If I write a check and it bounces, they charge me $3 for it.
A lot of people don't mind that.
They pay. Is that right?
I can go by this house here. They're supposed to pay for their gas. It's supposed to be COD. And they say, well, see if I got enough to do next week. I said, no, you'll be out by tomorrow. Well, I'll stretch it. I'll try to make it. And you go right back to Wollaston and come back. Now, tomorrow, they've called in the morning. And you charge them $3. They'll pay for what they owe and the $3. Explain all right? A lot of times they have the money then, when you're there. But they'd rather just risk it and pay $3 for coming back.
I don't understand that.
I don't either. But they'll do it.
Oh.
Not one time, but a lot of times.
Now, they're just about out of gas.
They know they're going to run out, because I tell them it's just about gone.
But they want, well, they can put their hand on there and tell how much they got.
Check the tank, it's empty.
And they'll risk waiting till you get back again.
Right.
A week later.
That's right. Telling them all the time it's not going to do.
Yeah.
But they'll call you in the morning.
And you can add the extra cost to it, and they'll go ahead and pay it.
Well, you got to drive 40 miles.
So you don't get much.
$3 still, no.
Yeah.
You'll pay for gasoline.
Well, you know, I got a peculiar notice through the First National Bank, you know, that's where I do business. Mabel does business with that other bank. We don't do business the same bank. And the only trouble I had was her writing check on me. That's the only trouble I have. If she gets out of money, she starts writing check on my account. And I got a letter yesterday that they wouldn't charge me any more service charge or charge for checks. You know, we used to charge you so much service charge, and I think it was 8-10 cents a check. And all that crap. I got a notice in my statement yesterday. See, my check, my statement comes out way early because it comes out of Jacksonville, and they do it through this here machine they got. And they said that on the count of my account had been below $99, that they were going to cancel that charge or checks. It didn't amount to anything anyway, because I didn't write but maybe one or two a month. But still, they charged me $1.50, I believe, service charge.
Yeah.
But they said they wouldn't do that no more. You get one of them?
No, we pay. I may this month. I don't know. But
yeah.
I'll look and see.
Yeah.
They've always charged, I think, 10 cents. 10 cents per check.
Then now, you've got customers where you have to go way back in the woods?
Yes. Don't even have electricity. Some of them got gas refrigerators. Cook with gas and heat with gas.
What happens if they don't pay? Can you pick the gas up?
After they burn it, no.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Who's caught?
Well, not me, but the company.
Well, that they ever had a tank in my yard, backyard back there when I moved down there. And, you know, I had a time getting them. It stayed down there a year. And I called them and told them that I didn't need it. And to take it up. And a man come by there and he says that I just filled the thing up just a few days before Juanita moved out of there. And they said, well, your tank is full of gas. I said, well, I can't help that. They said, well, says, we can't pay you for it. I said, I didn't ask you for it. I said, all I wanted is just you to get it up and get it out of here.
Now, we'll do that. Say Mr. Miles got this tank of gas here, and he moved off. Say he moved to California and notified us that he was moving and give us an address. I'd pick that tank of gas up and send him the money for it.
Oh, really?
Yep. Is that right? Well, this was a tank.
Well, all of them do it?
No.
Well, how do you all keep on doing that?
Well, if I know this tank is full, no gas being used out of it, same thing it was when I set it there.
Yeah.
That's a little trouble to pick it up. It's not that much trouble.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know anybody lived out in the woods anymore.
You'd be surprised.
Well, now, where do you run into that?
Everywhere.
And your company would have paid me for this gas in this tank?
Yes, sir.
Well, now, tell me about that.
He couldn't do it.
Tell me about that wood.
Well, I'm pretty sure of that. I said, I don't care about that. I said, I just walked out of here.
I got
Then tell about this wood business.
I got places I go to that'll tear the mirrors off of that truck if I didn't fold them in.
Oh.
You got 3 miles to go. Well, you take, let's see where I am. Old Woodard Coleman.
Yeah.
You know where Woodard lives?
Yeah.
Don't even have electricity back there.
No.
But that's easy to get to.
Yeah. That's right along the road there, railroad.
It ain't easy to get there, though. Not through them sand beds. Or used to be. I haven't
well,
been not said
bad anymore.
That ain't hardly in the woods. That's a sort of settled.
How come me in Florida
now?
Was just across the railroad in front of that house, and where there used to be a sidetrack there. I don't think there's one there now. And there was a sidetrack there, and that's where I built a mill to get that cypress out of that swamp.
There's a little spur comes off of that, goes through a, looks like through a pasture there. Whose pasture would that be?
That goes to Micanopy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goes through the.
Well, now, what other cases did you think of out in the woods?
I got a lot of them. It's 3-4 miles from town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Off the road.
Yes. Dirt road.
Yeah.
Some of mud holes.
Yeah.
But we got some bad places. Actually, these little trucks take the worst beating than any delivery truck I know of.
You know,
just like an old ice route.
How you mean, like an old ice route?
Off the road. I'd say 80% of the time anyway, you're off highway.
Oh. Is that the way the old ice route was?
Yes, sir. Well, they didn't have electricity or electric boxes. Now, Woodard's got a gas refrigerator.
Oh, has he?
My son owned a house down there in Ocala. And there was no heat in it at all. Wasn't built for no heat. Was not in there. And he moved to Jackson, Mississippi, and just left the house there. I told him, I said, I'm talking to him over the phone. I said, Ralph, I said, who's living in your house down there? And nobody. He said, ain't nobody down there living in it. I said, well, Ralph, it'd be a whole lot better if somebody was living in it. So I went down there to those real estate people and asked them about renting it, and they had somebody that wanted to rent it, but not without some way to heat it. Now, when this man came up here and dug up his tank, I asked him about putting a heater in there and putting a tank at this place to heat this house. And he said he would, and said when he got back to the office that he would have him to call me and tell me how much it would cost to do that. And so I told him to go ahead and do it, and send me a bill for it, and I'd pay it. And evidently, he taken that tank, and he taken out of my yard, and put it there. He could have done it. I don't know what he did, but he put a tank down there, and put a heater in, so it gets some heat.
Well, what did you do way back there now when you got to town and
I went in the sheriff's fellow Rutland's store and
George visit.
I told him, I said, Jill, I want a job. Jill Rutland, I said, Jill, I want a job. He said, what have you done, run away? I said, no, I just left.
Let me look out here.
My daddy told him, said, don't worry, said he'll be back.
Oh, your daddy said that?
Yeah, I said, you need to worry, said he'll be back. But I never went back. I never did. I never did go that home again.
Mr. Pastor?
Uh-uh, I never did.
Your home?
And I went on down to, and he asked me, he says, well, where are you going to stay? Old Lady Dees used to be a neighbor to my mother, and she run the hotel now. And I told him, I said, I'll stay at Miss Dees's. And he says, where's your clothes? I says, I haven't got any. Well, he says, you got to have some clothes. I says, that I know.
Now, you still 13?
No. That's when I got to town. And he, old fella next door to Hitty, he had two stores. And the next one was a juice store, old man Jay Wegardner. And he carried pretty good clothes. And he told me, he says, well, I said, you go over there to old man Wegardner and get what you want. And I reckon he called him, went and told him to let me have what I wanted. And I got a few shirts and a few suits of underwear and a couple of pair of pants. And a pair of decent shoes and some socks. One thing, I think they, that bill come $54.
Got a lot of money.
And so I went over, he told me, he says, and I went to wait for him now for $30 a month. And he, and Ms. Dees asked $15 a month board. And he told me, he says, well, says you going up to the house, say, we got an extra room, say, you just stay with us. So I went on up there and stayed with them as long as they stayed there. I went down this farm and stayed. Minnesota white people were down there. The name were Lewises. And they said they were Scuffletonians. I never heard tell of no such a nationality people. But they've got, you know, you can't mess with a nigger. He's superstitious. And they put a pistol cartridge and a matchbox, you know, and put it on his door through the cat hole or something like that, and a few roots with some hair on the head wrapped around it, and tied up in a red piece of flannel and all like that. Why, you put that on the nigger door, on his water bucket, and that nigger leave. Now, there ain't no question about it. He'd sure do it. And that was what was happening down to the farm. We owned a pretty big farm down there. And he was trying to get a fellow Smith to go down there and stay. And he couldn't get nobody to go down there. And I told him, I said, Joe, I said, I'll go down there and stay. He said, ain't you scared to go down there and stay by yourself and all down there? I said, no, I ain't scared to go down and stay. I'll go stay. So old John Sutton, an old hame leg nigger, come to town, and I told him, I said, John, I said, when you get the mules up to barn to see me, I said, get a case of that whiskey and put in your wagon and cat on back. I was, had it stored down in the warehouse. Generally bought cottonseed and put in that warehouse in the fall of the year and sold them. I told him to get a case of liquor, that 12 quarts full rosa, and put in that in the wagon and carry it home with him. I said, I think I'll be down there Monday. I said, I'll have to stay here and wait Saturday in the store, but I said, I'll come down there Monday. And I said, I'll be down, stay down there with him. And he told me, unless somebody come down there that they had some confidence in, that all the niggas down there were going to leave. So I went on down there, and about the first thing I done was got drunk, you know, and 12 quarts of liquor last one man put go wild. And so old man Lewis came over there, and I was out there in the field where a nigga was harrying the new ground, harrying, tearing up the roots, you know. And he come over there, and I was about 15 years old.
I was going to ask you, how old you were then?
Yeah, about 15
years. You've been there all the time.
Yeah. And he told me, he said, well, boy, said, don't you know this here's a dangerous place for you to stay? He said, I'm sure you're scared somebody will hurt you down here by yourself. He kept talking. I told him, I said, Mr. Lewis, I said, I reckon I just will tell you now. I said, the next time there's anything printed on one of these nigger doors, this here matchbox outfit shoved under the door or anything like that, I said, I'm going to kill you. He said, Phil said, I wouldn't do nothing. I said, no. I said, I'm pretty sure you wouldn't, but I said, that'd be a start. I said, next time it happens, I said, I'm going to kill you. And I had a brand new 38 police special that I took out the showcase before I left there. And I pulled it out and I told him, I said, this is a brand new one. I said, it's never been shot but once. I said, next time I shoot it, I says, I'm going to kill you. I said, now what you do is stay at home. And I said, I'll stay over here, and I said, we'll get along fine. But I said, don't ever let me catch you on this place again. Well, sister, he didn't come either. No, sir, he didn't come. We didn't have no trouble. I didn't have no trouble at all. And, you know, I enjoyed staying down there with them niggas. Oh, boy, I was just having the biggest time in the world. And my liquor give out, all I had to do was tell John to get me another case I'd wear or something. But finally... I seen Miss Maggie come in one day. That was Mr. Rutler's wife. And she had a big bay horse that she drove. And he was a single-footing horse, if you know what
yeah.
I'm talking about. And the share rode down to where we was just a crooked road through the pines. And I seen that horse coming through, and I know it was Miss Megan. I was just a drunk little one, and she come down there and got me, and it was a pretty good while before I ever went back down there again. Lord, Lord, I don't know. Them folks should have shot me. They should have killed me. After he sold out all this thing and went down on the farm and had a great big old colonial house down there, and he repaired it and fixed it and all like that. And it was an old time of place. And when I first knowed it, when I was a little old boy, it belonged to Major Pelham. Major Pelham lived in a little town up there, and I know old Major Pelham, mighty good old man, used to borrow his horse and wagon to haul wood with our little boy, and he used to live there, and they called it the Deerland Plantation. It was a big old place. And he moved down there, and I went down there and stayed part of 2 years and looked after the commissary and that part of it, and the whole supplies and all, which was pretty good job. Well, I think it's about 60 plows, what you call then, you know, and pretty big bunch of folks to feed and take care of, and it was pretty good job, I'm gonna tell you, and I stayed down there part of 2 years, and I got tired of it, and
I don't see how you get tired of that, Phil. I just
No, as good as they was to me, I had got me a gallon of wine over there from an old woman, and it was good, and I hid it in the cane patch. And I lost it.
You lost it.
And it was dark as a dicker. But you know, Miss Maggie got up and went down there and helped me find that jug of wine. And my room was upstairs. And come in there cold, you know, and old John, he lived right there close to the barn. And I could call him to take my horse out, you know, and put him in the barn, feed him, and do whatever it is. And for me be just as cold as I could be, almost froze. Go in there and pull off my clothes and get to bed with them. I done that too darn cold for me to go upstairs and go to bed by myself, and I get to bed with them. I don't see they should have killed me.
Well, that sounds like a monster's fine place. You didn't ever need the premises. You just had everything that you needed.
Well, I was the only lad they had, they said. And I expect then he probably was worth $150,000.
Oh, yeah.
But I bought a shingle mill, although I wanted to leave there. I wanted to do something.
Well, let me tell you, Bill, before you leave. Now, is that the place out there where Mr. Lewis was on?
Yeah.
And then who did you get to live on the other place? Did the Smith or whoever it was come over there?
Who was that?
The other fella that he's trying to get.
Oh, no, he never did. He never did get nobody. I went down there and stayed myself.
Yeah.
He was trying to get this fellow Smith to go down there
and
stay to take care of old niggas, but he couldn't get him, and I told him I'd go myself.
Well, now, where did you have the commissary?
That was after they sold out the store in town.
Yeah.
And he moved down there and lived down there himself on the farm.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I stayed part of 2 years down there.
And that was one of them big old houses? Houses.
And last year, I left there in 1916. Mm-hmm. I left down there in 1916 and went up to upper edge or north edge of the county. And bought to share little old shingle mill from a widow woman. And I moved it up there. I get along all right. But I had two of his mules. And he come up there and tried to get me to go back home. And leave that alone until after the crop was made and all like that, and then you can do anything you want to start a crop next year and wanted me to go back. I told him I wasn't going back. That I wasn't going back then, nor no other time. And he says, well, I'm going to take my mules and come home. I says, no, you ain't. I says, you ain't going to take them. I said, now, if you tell me what they're worth. He said he was either going to take them or I had to pay for them. I says, I'll pay for them. I said, you ain't going to take them. So I told him, I said, I'll meet you in town in the morning. And said he wanted $600 for those two mules, at which that was just an ordinary price for a good mule then.
Good Lord.
I had one pair of mules that I gave $950 for. And I told him, I says, Joe, I says, it's not... is $600. I says, I expect I owe you nearer $6,000 than I do $600. But I says, whenever you start to make me do something, I says, that's just wrong. I says, you ain't gonna do it. I says, I'm not going back down there today nor no other time.
Oh, he was putting the pressure on you.
Yeah.
He talking straight to you.
Yeah, he wanted told him straight, he was putting pressure enough on me to make me go back. So I went on down there. I had established a pretty good credit at this Farmers and Merchant Bank down there. And I had a little money in there, and I knew I could borrow the rest of it and pay him, and did. And when I give him money right in front of the bank, when he started off, I told him, I said, goodbye, Jill. He turned around and looked at me. He didn't say a word. He went on. He went home and he sent Miss Maggie up there, and I wasn't there. I know she was there, and I wouldn't go down there. And finally, she had to go on back. I never did see her again. And so it wasn't long after then before I was drafted in the Army, you know. And,
oh, that's right.
And
did you know that was they were on your heels then?
No.
Yeah.
No. And so I left little fella Harrison. That's the little fella that stayed with me 24 years. I went by an old cotton house in the field, and he was sick. And I had met the man twice. But I thought lots of him, and everybody else ever knowed him did. And he was mighty sick. And I was staying down there then. And I got him to get in the car with me and go by town and see the doctor. And then he went on down there with me and...
I can hear him. I got to go in here, man.
Went on down there and stayed in a few days. It was just... this malaria fever we had up there.
Sure.
And he got over it. But we never did separate again. He died at my house. And now you talking about somebody was a fool about Mabel? Oh, he loved her better than anything in the world. And I tell her now, I says, reading you so damn rotten is Harrison. He was a peculiar little fellow, and she couldn't cook, she couldn't wash, she She couldn't iron. She couldn't keep house. They had to be a maid there all the time to do this. Now, she couldn't do it. And if an ashtray got full in an automobile, she had to have a new one. And if she started home, there's one thing he didn't want was her to go back home. Her daddy was sick, you know, for several years. And but he didn't want her to go back home wear the same dress that she did before. That she had to have some new clothes when she went back, if it was every other week. And I tell her, I said, that's why you so damn rotten.
And he was there with you?
Yeah.
Stayed there with you.
And when I went to the went service, why, he stayed there and taking care of what we had and all like that. And he was there when I come back. And I come back in 1919, the latter part of it. It was in the 22nd of...